So I'll be talking about using what we call GPS interferometric reflectometry to estimate soil moisture. The co-authors are listed up there. Tyson has been helpful in providing data from the field site in Oklahoma that we'll talk about here. We have funding from various sources and assistance from organizations like UNAVCO and different LTERs. Additional information can be found on our website down here. So here's a basic result that some of you may have seen before. This is 200 days of data from a grassland in Colorado. And on this axis is soil moisture content, volumetric water content measured with Campbell Scientific water content reflectometers at a depth of 2.5 centimeters in the soil. And you can see every time it rains, which are these blue bars down here, the soil moisture goes up and dries down as predicted. And the width of that gray area represents the variability between the soil moisture probes that exist. And what I have on these with these red points on this second axis here is an estimate of soil moisture that we've calibrated using measurements of reflection from the soil surface using a standard GPS antenna. And the reason why this actually isn't strange is because the GPS signals that exist are the same as those planned for remote sensing soil moisture missions like SMAP. So how basically does this method work? This would be a standard geodetic quality GPS antenna right here. And usually what geodesists do when they're trying to locate the position of something is they focus on the direct signal, which is this blue path from a GPS satellite to the antenna. And what we're doing in this study is we're trying to ignore this direct signal and instead focus on what the geodesists call multipath, which is basically just the bounce of that signal off the ground and back up to the antenna. Now, how do we back out this information? Let me just go back for 1 second. These antennas were not designed to measure this multipath. Instead, they're designed to measure this direct signal. So this is not simple. And here's what an observation looks like from a standard geodetic antenna and receiver. This is power measured at that receiver. And it's increasing throughout one particular satellite rise and set. The power is greatest when the satellite is highest in the sky due to the design of the antenna. And the direct signal that I showed you in the previous slide, that's from the satellite to the antenna, is shown in blue. And these oscillations around that signal in red here, are the multipath. So we use this basically interference pattern between the direct and the indirect signal to look at the dielectric properties of the soil. So here's an example of one observation from one antenna of one satellite rising. So this is perhaps the trickiest presentation system ever.
Yeah. Strange.
It's okay. So as the satellite's rising from low elevation angles towards higher elevation angles, the bounce off the surface is an area that's far away from the antenna, and that multipath is received here. As that satellite gets higher and higher in the sky, the angle is changing and the location of that reflection point is moving closer to the antenna. And this is what our signal looks like. This is from one observation of a satellite rising. We get this interference pattern between the direct and the indirect signals. And what we do is we use characteristics of this interference pattern to estimate things like soil moisture. Soil moisture is best represented by a phase shift in this pattern. So this pattern is shifting one or another direction as soil moisture varies. We can estimate snow depth much more easily than soil moisture simply with the frequency of this signal as the ground or the bounce point moves up or down as snow gets thicker or thinner. The frequency of that signal changes. And at the end of the talk here, I'll show you some results where we're measuring vegetation water content using the amplitude of this interference pattern. So what's the sensing footprint? The sensing footprint is approximately 1,000 meters squared. Here's a map of a standard GPS antenna. The antenna's here. And when a satellite is rising, in this case to the west, and it's at 5-degree elevation angle, so something like that, the sampling area is shown in this red ellipse. As that angle goes to 10 degrees, it's in the green ellipse, and then blue, etc., as it gets higher. Each one of these sets of ellipses is associated with a different GPS satellite rising or setting. So we can track various satellites rising and setting, and then basically fill in this mapped area around an antenna. The last thing I should point out here is that each observation of soil moisture or vegetation comes basically from an integrated measurement from an ellipse associated with a satellite rise or set. Now, why would anybody do this? The positives of this approach is that extensive networks exist. So here's a map of existing GPS antennas and receivers of the right quality, running the right software, with freely downloadable and archived GPS data that one could use to estimate soil moisture. And as I mentioned previously, the frequency of this GPS signal is identical to that planned for SMAP, which is NASA's next soil moisture mission. Now, why wouldn't you want to do this? The main reason is that the antenna is designed to suppress the multipath from the ground. The antennas are designed to focus on the direct signal, and as a result, it makes the job of the hydrologists much more difficult. And then the other problem is that site conditions vary between these thousands of sites that exist, and they vary in a bad way, meaning that, you know, 10% of these sites are right next to a parking lot. 10% of these sites are next to a barn. And what we're doing for about 1,000 or so sites in the western U.S. is we're characterizing which of those sites are appropriate for using GPS interferometric reflectometry. That process is largely done. So our long-term goal, at least in the next several years, is to use data from what's called NSF's Plate Boundary Observatory to estimate soil moisture. There's about 1,000 sites in the western U.S., and they all have the exact same instrumentation. The data archiving is exactly the same, and we can use these data to estimate soil moisture and vegetation and snow where it snows. Let's see here. In the short run, what we're doing is developing our algorithm further. And that's being done at a set of about 9 sites where we have identical GPS and hydrology infrastructure. So this is Tyson's site, the SMAP, which Mike Koch will be talking about later, the SMAP in situ sensor testbed C site here. This is one of our sites. This is Sevieta in New Mexico, grassland and shrubland. Here's a site near Boulder, Colorado, in a grassland. Here's a alfalfa site near Boulder, Colorado, and this is a high alpine site at Niwot Ridge, LTER. At each of these sites, we have installed GPS instruments, we have soil moisture probes in the ground, and we measure, with help of our collaborators, vegetation water content anywhere from a weekly to biweekly basis. So how do we know if we're right? We check in a number of different ways. So at each site, we have water content reflectometers that are inserted at different depths in the soil. They're inserted horizontally. I don't believe the absolute value provided by these water content reflectometers. However, they do provide a very efficient and useful method to gauge the fluctuations of soil moisture through time. So we'll look at that. The other thing we do is we use data from theta probe surveys or gravimetric sampling to actually assess the magnitude of our variations. And then lastly, we're measuring biomass and vegetation water content and height at each site. So here's some data from the test bed in Oklahoma. This is 2010 data. The 2011 data, which we just processed, looks pretty much the same, although drier. And here's two traces of soil moisture. Blue is the probes inserted at 2.5 centimeters. Green is at 7.5 centimeters. And what you can see is basically the soil moisture goes up and comes down associated with rainfall, and this measure of soil moisture from GPS is doing basically the same thing. It's easier to see on a scatter plot. Here's the GPS measurement here, and here's volumetric water content. So remember, this is measured over about 1,000 meters squared. This is measured over, we have five probes at 2.5 centimeters, so, you know, several meters squared. There's two sources of outliers. There we go. One source of outlier has to do with changes in water content profiles following rainfall events. And when the surface gets wet, we tend to have a big mismatch between the GPS and the water content measured in situ. That's shown here. The other thing to point out on this slide is that, in general, the correlations tend to be a little stronger with measurements at 2.5 centimeters, which are basically an average over the top 5 centimeters. This would be predicted from understanding of active microwave signals propagating through soil. We've done forward models of this GPS signal propagation, and it's consistent with the 2.5 centimeter depth having greater control. How about absolute magnitude? So here's volumetric soil moisture content measured from theta probe surveys at the Oklahoma site. And here's our estimates from the days when those sites, when those theta probe surveys were completed. And you can see that there's a pretty good correlation between the two measures, given the differences in measurement scale. So I'll wrap up here with our current efforts. We're currently trying to improve our forward modeling to explicitly account for soil water profiles and vegetation. We are trying to include error estimates on our GPS retrievals. So each time a satellite rises or sets, you get a different quality of the data. So we have 1,000 sites. We have something like 18 rising and setting satellites per site per day. So each one of those records needs to be sorted through to figure out when there's problems of one type or another. And then lastly, we're trying to identify the effects of vegetation and then remove those effects. Here's some of our data from a wheat field near Boulder, Colorado. And this is the scaled GPS amplitude in blue. The amplitude is just the measure of the height of that interference pattern. And in black is the measurement of vegetation water content from the field. And as you can see, why do I keep losing the pointer? It's amazing. It's terrible. There we go. Okay. So in black are the measurements of vegetation water content in the field. And you can see the wheat is growing. It gets to about 0.7 kilograms per meter squared in water content. Starts to dry out, and then the harvest is right here. And you can see the GPS amplitude largely tracks the vegetation water content, with a couple of departures right around rainfall events, which are in the dashed lines. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks. Let's take time for one question.
Oh, it wasn't that strange. Mike.
You said you didn't trust the 616 number. Is that uncalibrated?
Well, you know, we've calibrated them at some of the sites. When we take different soil samples from those sites, and then we get a different calibration. So for example, that first slide, which is our grassland site near Boulder, the calibration worked out well, and I think the magnitude was pretty close. So it seems more difficult at Oklahoma. Okay. Perfect.